Let me tell you, let me tell you, let me tell you the truth. Keep it on the down low, keep it on the down low, get on down to the down low.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Download Podcast. I'm Laura Chaunette. Well, times are weird here in Telluride, as they are all over the world right now, thanks to this nasty diva, coronavirus. A lot of the world is in different states of isolation right now. We've officially been sheltering in place for several days, on top of a couple of weeks of social distancing. A lot of businesses have closed and events have been canceled, which feels especially strange since we would normally be in one of the busiest parts of the ski season. However, folks are still allowed to hike up the resort and take some turns and to hike and cross-country ski, and so for all of that, we're really grateful. Town is quiet in an almost eerie way, though, so now more than ever seems like an important time to stay connected and to share stories. That being said, we want to hear from you. How is sheltering in place going for you? Do you and your roommates have a new tradition? Do you want to rip your partner's hair out? Have you witnessed random acts of kindness? We want to know how you're holding up. So email us at telluridedownlow@gmail.com, and we'd love to record your commentary over Zoom to release over the next few weeks. This also seemed like a good time to release one of our favorite stories to keep you entertained while you're hunkered down. This one was told last May at our Mountain Film event and quickly became referred to as the Bear Story. Here is Monty Montipar.
So I'm in my truck, driving into the darkness. It's fall in Alaska, and I'm heading east across the state toward McCarthy. McCarthy is a little redneck hippie town at the end of a 60-mile dirt road in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of this nation's largest national park, Wrangell St. Elias. Don't feel bad, not many people have heard of this place. I bet maybe some have in this room, though. I had that feeling. McCarthy's like, it's at the confluence of two rivers, the toe of a giant glacier, at the base of some of the most spectacular mountains on the planet. It's one of the most beautiful places in the world. And I did not want to go back there. I actually thought about launching into the 5-day drive back to my parents' house in Breckenridge, Colorado. And I called my parents. And in over a decade as a wilderness guide in Alaska, I had never heard them so deeply concerned for my well-being. This was different. I was devastated. The night before, I was on a couch in Anchorage, and I was excited to spend my second wedding anniversary with my wife. We were living apart that summer. I was guiding in McCarthy, and she was living in Anchorage pursuing her own professional goals. She was living with friends. It was their couch. It smelled like two kids and a dog. She turned to me and said, "I cheated on you. 2 years ago, before our wedding in McCarthy." It was not what I expected to get for my second anniversary. I hear cotton is traditional. And as the evening went on, the more I found out, the less that I felt like I could deal with any of this. And when it was finally revealed that it wasn't once, it was an affair, I told her I didn't feel safe there anymore. I hugged her. I said, "I love you." I got in my truck and I started the 8-hour drive back to McCarthy. I will never forget the first day I stepped foot in McCarthy, Alaska. I felt like I had rediscovered Colorado in 1970 as my parents had always described it. Yeah, this town was just waking up from being a ghost town. The population was maybe 200 people. there were at least 100 unleashed dogs. You have to walk over a footbridge across a river to get into town. All the roads are dirt. It was the kind of place where you could go to the one bar in town and be sitting next to a mountain guide, a gold miner, and the mayor. And the mayor was a dog. And for me, this place was a blank slate. I was 20 years old, and I knew how small towns work. Your actions accumulate over time, and eventually your character is seen by all. So I worked hard. I kept my nose clean. I treated people with respect. I worked my way from a first-year guide to part owner of the guide service. I made that place my home, and I shared it with the woman that I loved. And even though life there can be harsh sometimes, I felt protected by that place. If my wife loved me and McCarthy respected me, then nothing else mattered. And as I drove back into town that day, I didn't feel either of those things anymore. Some people had known the whole time. Now it felt like everybody knew. I was the last one to be told my own secret. I couldn't face going back to our cabin alone, so I went to stay with my best friend, Chris, and his wife, Kieran. And they cared for me, because I was incapable of doing so for myself. I have never experienced an emotional injury manifest such physical pain. I was weak, but had no appetite. It was hard to sleep, and when I did, I had horrific nightmares. Minutes felt like days, and days felt like forever. And if this is what life was going to be like, I was pretty sure I didn't want to keep doing it anymore. After a couple of days of that, I wanted to give Chris and his wife a break. Because it is difficult enough living in a one-room cabin in remote Alaska with your partner, let alone having your broken-hearted buddy crashing your living room / dining room / only room. So when my buddy Chester asked if I wanted to crash at his place for the night, I took him up on that offer. Chris and Chester live in the same subdivision. But that term is grossly misleading in this context. Think less suburbs and more like a collection of shacks, shanties, cabins, outhouses, treehouses, and permanently parked school buses connected by a gravel road shoved through the woods. I'd met Chester that first day I'd gotten to McCarthy, Alaska, a decade earlier. And we immediately bonded over a love of punk rock music. And our dogs are sisters. And I followed Chester through the dark to his cabin that night, and we pulled an all-night heart-to-heart, where I told him that this entire thing felt like the last act of some great Greek tragedy that had been specifically constructed to use my own pre-existing internal flaws as the very means of my destruction. I told him I had always struggled with my masculinity and that I felt completely emasculated. I told him I had always struggled to control others' perceptions of me. And now the thing that I'd like to be the most private was most public. I told him I was angry, but I wasn't letting myself feel it because it felt so intense and I didn't know what to do with it. I woke up in the morning with my 85-pound husky mutt dog on my chest, in her most aggressive version yet of, maybe you'd feel just a little bit better if you pet a big furry dog. Chester and I got up and drank coffee, which I do and smoked cigarettes, which I don't do, but that morning it felt like I should. And I smoked the shit out of some cigarettes. And then I went to leave, and my phone died, and I realized I'd left my sleeping bag back in Chester's place. So I go back in, I put my sleeping bag over my shoulder, and as I go to leave a second time, Chester stops me, and he puts his hand on my chest, and he says, "You have an infinite well of power inside of you." And if you knew Chester, you would know it's a very Chester thing to say. It was just past peak foliage in Alaska. The bright yellows and golds had faded, mottled leaves barely hanging to the trees. And I walked into the woods alone. My dogs had gone back to Chris's early for breakfast. And I felt alone in the world. I felt like my marriage was a lie. I felt like my whole life was a lie. I felt like I died on that couch. I felt lost in the world. And then I realized I was lost in the woods. Yeah, actually lost. Wilderness guide lost in his best friend's backyard. I was crushing it. In my defense, Chester's the kind of dude that meticulously doesn't walk the same way just to keep it wild back there. And it's brushy, you know, but I'm disoriented. I'm trying to gain my bearings. I take a step forward, a twig snaps underfoot. I look to my left, and 25 yards away from me is a 750-pound grizzly bear. Somebody just say, fuck that. That's the most succinct version of exactly what I felt. Because I had had a decent amount of bear encounters in my time in Alaska at this point. I'd even been mock charged by a grizzly bear, something that they'll do usually at a greater distance. It's their version of asserting dominance, like pounding on their chest. I have never had any animal look at me the way this bear looked at me, roared, and charged immediately. There was nothing mock going on here. This was worst case scenario. I had just startled a fall-time grizzly in the bushes. I turned my head to run. Which you are not supposed to do. But in my defense, it is a difficult instinct to control when presented with something that terrifying. And in that moment, I knew exactly where my bear gun was. 5 miles away at my bedside table. I didn't have any bear spray, no other means of protection. I scanned the area for somewhere to hide or a tree to climb. There isn't one, because there never is in Alaska. Grizzly bears run like 40 miles an hour, so whatever was going to happen was going to happen pretty quick. What you're supposed to do in the rare event that you're attacked by a grizzly bear, is play dead. Lie down, belly first on the ground to protect your organs. Put your hands over the back of your neck to protect your spinal cord. And then let the bear maul you. And only if the attack persists, then fight for your life. I'd felt mostly dead for 4 days now. I felt like I'd been getting mauled by the world. I felt like the attack had persisted long enough. I turned around to see the bear barreling at me through the bushes. I planted my feet. I put my teal and lime green sleeping bag over my head. And when I opened my mouth, as if it was being ripped out of me, came all of my pain and confusion and directionless anger in the form of a gut-wrenching, eye-bulging, vein-popping, primal scream. And the bear stopped. But now the bear was very close. So close that this time when it roared at me, I saw a spittle shoot off of its lips. I could see the steam of its warm breath cutting through the cold morning air. But I wasn't going anywhere. I just found out I don't want to die. And if I am going to die, they're not going to find me in my best friend's backyard with claw marks in my back. So I looked that bear directly in the eyes, which you are also not supposed to do. And I dug down deep inside of me, past the burst bubble of McCarthy and the shards of my broken heart, down to a place that was not broken, a place that cannot be destroyed. And from that place, I roared, and then I charged the bear. And I don't think it's what the bear expected to get. Because it looked pretty confused and hopped and ran into the bushes. Many longtime Alaskans, thank you. Call back to last night. You guys, we can all have bear story competitions after this, okay? Many longtime Alaskans feel the moral of this story is very simple. Carry your gun, you stupid hippie. But to me, it felt immediately more profound. I felt like I had just been warned that this experience was going to summon my own personal demons in their most intense forms. And if I let them, they were going to kill me. If I was going to survive, I was going to need to learn to stand my ground, be brave, and look them right in the eye. Thank you. I love you, Telluride.
That story came from Monty Montefiore. Be sure to check out his other stories and stand-up comedy on his YouTube channel. Just search Monty, M-O-N-T-E, Montefiore, M-O-N-T-E-P-A-R-E. He is absolutely incredible. All right, guys, remember, if you have something to share with us, just email us at telluridedownlow@gmail.com. Don't forget to be kind to yourself and to others, to wash your hands, and to check in on the folks that you care about. The Down Low was produced and recorded by Back Pocket Creative in Telluride, Colorado, with support from Telluride Theater and Telluride Magazine. If you're interested in sponsoring the podcast, please email Jenny Page at jenny@telluridemagazine.com. If you'd like to learn more about our upcoming live events, follow us on Facebook under Telluride Down Low, or shoot us an email at telluridedownlow@gmail.com. If you like the podcast, subscribe and share it with your friends. I'm Laura Shawnette, and I'll be back soon with The Down Low.